A 2015 study examined the outcomes of women that have children with black men. The results were staggering. Currently, 70% of black children are born out of wedlock. However, when the mother is white and the father black, the rate jumps to 97%. 97% report the father is not in the child's life. 98% of white mothers studied reported the father does not support their children financially. And 97% of the women have used welfare to help support themselves and their children. The vast majority of white women that have children with black men live far below the poverty line. Only 10% of women that have children with black men out of wedlock end up marrying. A 2013 study of intimate partner violence in relationships surveyed nearly 10,000 people. The authors hypothesized that interracial couples would experience higher levels of violence compared to intraracial relationships. They found that compared to white relationships, both black couples and interracial couples experienced statistically significant higher levels of relationship violence. The National Center for Injury Prevention and Control estimates that relationship violence costs around $4.1 billion a year in medical and mental health care costs. The War Against Whites in Advertising by Richard Houck. The mass marketing of interracial relationships, particularly white women with black men, has become so ubiquitous and so militant, even the least observant members of our culture have begun to notice. Walking through a mall recently, I noticed three large marketing images of couples in three different stores. Two of the three were interracial couples, depicting a white woman and a black man. The third couple was white. Perhaps what struck me as most peculiar was the fact that the city where I was shopping, whites make up about 97% of the population, blacks are less than 2%. I wondered if the purpose of diverse advertising was to sell more products or really to indoctrinate, to condition, and signal how progressive they are. Based on small glimpses of culture, one might assume half or more of all relationships involve some sort of race mixing. If a person who had no information about the US or Europe were to see our television, magazine, billboard, and storefront advertisements, he might assume there were virtually zero normal white men anywhere to be found. The combination of white women with black men is hands down the most common mixed-race couple depicted in advertising. That combination will be the focus of this essay. I thought about the probability that two of the three advertisement couples I saw in the mall that afternoon were there by mere coincidence. Between men and women, white, black, Hispanic, Asian, and other, there are 25 possible combinations of couples. If the diversity in advertising was truly about appealing to the greatest number of customers or potential customers, showing white women with black men at such a high level seems to be a very odd strategy. To focus so much on one combination while ignoring so many others, there simply must be some other goal beyond selling merchandise. There is a notable and interesting body of research on interracial relationships and marriages. It is not exhaustive by any means, but we can synthesize the available data to form an accurate view of such relationships. Pew Research 2012 conducted a large study of interracial marriage that provides a considerable amount of data. Since 1980, the total percent of interracial marriages has risen from 3.2% to 8.4%. Of new marriages, the rate rose from 6.7% to 15.1%. In 2010, the most common intermarriage was white-Hispanic at 43.3% and white-black, the least common, at 11.9%. Not all interracial relationships, of course, are marriages, but we can use the marriage data to reasonably extrapolate the information to the wider society and relationships. As of 2010, whites, on average, were the least likely to marry outside of their race. Less than 10% of whites intermarry, while Hispanics, blacks, and Asians are all 2 to 3 times more likely to intermarry. A study of over 2 million online dating interactions revealed distinct racial preferences between groups. White women responded most frequently to white men, and least frequently to black men. In light of this data, it is all the more bizarre that the combination of a white woman with a black man is seen so frequently in advertising. A 2015 study examined the outcomes of women that have children with black men. The results were staggering. Currently, 70% of black children are born out of wedlock. However, when the mother is white and the father black, the rate jumps to 97%. 97% report the father is not in the child's life. 98% of white mothers studied reported the father does not support their children financially. And 97% of the women have used welfare to help support themselves and their children. The vast majority of white women that have children with black men live far below the poverty line. Only 10% of women that have children with black men out of wedlock end up marrying. A 2013 study of intimate partner violence in relationships surveyed nearly 10,000 people. The authors hypothesized that interracial couples would experience higher levels of violence compared to intraracial relationships. They found that compared to white relationships, both black couples and interracial couples experienced statistically significant higher levels of relationship violence. The National Center for Injury Prevention and Control estimates that relationship violence costs around $4.1 billion a year in medical and mental health care costs. Among whites in 1958, only 4% approved interracial marriages between whites and blacks. In 2007, 75% of whites reported they approve of such unions. Historically and contemporarily, blacks and Hispanics have always held a higher approval rating of interracial marriages. From a 2011 Pew Research study, 40% of whites, 51% of blacks, and 48% of Hispanics report that people of different races marrying is a change for the better in society. 12% of whites, 8% of blacks, and 9% of Hispanics say it's for the worse, and the remaining of those surveyed say there is no difference. The younger the cohort, the more likely they were to say the increase in interracial marriage is for the better. Liberals more likely than conservatives to say interracial marriage is for the better, and college graduates were also more likely to support the notion. Pew Research 2010 found that 69% of people surveyed said that single women having children is a bad thing. 43% say unmarried couples raising children is a bad thing, yet only 14% say interracial marriage is a bad thing. There is something oddly ironic about being in favor of interracial relationships, while at the same time abhorring the logical outcomes of those relationships. Both Pew Research and Gallup's latest findings report the majority of U.S. citizens approve of interracial marriages and relationships. Although these are generally self-reporting surveys and anonymous, a study of brain scans suggests that there is a social desirability bias coming into play. Social desirability bias is the tendency of survey and study participants to reply to socially contentious questions in a way that is socially and publicly acceptable, even when the surveys are anonymous. A 2017 study in the Journal of Experimental Social Psychology looked at insula activity in the brain when participants viewed images of interracial couples compared to same-race couples. Insula activation is responsible for a variety of emotions. Evidence shows that insula activity is present when a person experiences disgust and is thought to be a reliable marker for both disgust and aversion. The study found statistical significance between insula activation of participants looking at same-race couples compared to interracial couples. Despite a minority of participants explicitly stating they disagree with interracial dating and marriage, the electroencephalogram, EEG, told a different story. This study also used an implicit association task, IAT, to measure response times of participants in categorizing interracial couples and same-race couples with either a silhouette of a human or a silhouette of an animal. Participants were placed in two conditions, one primed with disgusting images, the other with positive images. Researchers found that all participants showed an implicit bias towards matching interracial couples with animals, and the condition primed to be disgusted was even faster, showing a greater implicit bias against interracial couples. There was both a neural reaction of disgust and an implicit reaction of disgust to interracial couples. We now know that whites are the least likely to marry outside of their race. We know that when white women marry outside of their race, they are more likely to be abused, to become single mothers, live in poverty, We know that despite feigned acceptance, white people show a legitimate disgust response to interracial relationships. We also know that despite the barrage of quote-unquote diversity in films, television, and in advertisements, same-race couples are still the most common, by far. So what's the purpose of the blatant propaganda? David Vinjamori for Forbes writes, quote, "What's the advantage of a wider variety of gender, ethnicity, and sexual presence represented in media and advertising? Simply put, we are more likely to identify with someone that looks like us," unquote. Michelle Castillo for CNBC suggests that Americans want even more quote-unquote diversity in ads, where she cites a survey of 2,000 people where 66% report diversity in advertising as a factor to consider when purchasing a product. These are excuses, at best. We still have not answered why we see the very particular arrangement of white women with black men time and time again. I do not believe for a second that interracial advertising under the guise of quote-unquote diversity is about selling clothes or laundry detergent or cereal. It is propaganda through and through, the purpose of which is to present a distorted worldview, to humiliate, to mock, and to make complacent. White men are the last vanguard against this occupation of a hostile elite. White women are displayed with non-white men not to sell items, but as a tactic of psychological warfare against our civilization. Very rarely anymore are white men portrayed in a favorable light. They are often the overweight, goofy, clumsy, half-wit that relies on women and non-whites to save the day. From films to television to advertisements, this is an increasingly common anti-white canard. The increasing acceptance of interracial relationships over the last 70 years has not been a function of anything other than increased propaganda efforts. The outcomes are socially and individually undesirable. Little, if any, good comes from promoting white women to date and marry outside of their race. What we are seeing is a systemic attack on white identity. We are seeing but one of many aspects of the war on whites becoming a creeping normality in the West.
Hello, ladies. Look at your man. Now back to me. Now back at your man. Now back to me. Sadly, he isn't me. But if he stopped using lady-scented body wash and switched to Old Spice, he could smell like he's me.
The psychological effects of advertising have been well documented. Advertising has the ability to make people choose an inferior product simply by manipulating the effect of conditioning. Studies suggest that the average American is exposed to as many as 5,000 advertisements in a day. The American Psychological Association has concluded there is a link between unhealthy food advertisements to childhood obesity and a link between tobacco and alcohol advertisements to underage smoking and drinking. The APA found these effects to be so strong that they have called for strict regulations on advertisements that are marketed to children. The most recent and perhaps belligerent example of anti-white propaganda came from Netflix via a set of three commercials for the company. The series of the three commercials is titled The Couple, which features a white woman and a black man. The commercial Open Relationship from the series depicts two couples, an interracial couple and a white couple, where the white man is depicted as small, weak, insecure, unprogressive, and close-minded. His white girlfriend quickly decides to cast him aside to spend the evening with the interracial couple, as the black man quite literally steals the man's girlfriend in front of him, humiliating him. This is a commercial, with the alleged intent to encourage more people to subscribe to Netflix. It came to my attention that this commercial was not a result of white ethnomasochism, but perhaps something far more disquieting. These companies are not simply promoting diversity and trying to appeal to a wider range of consumers. They are promoting the increased abuse of white women. They are promoting a generation of poor, fatherless children where our tax dollars will be funneled. They are not just trying to sell products. They are trying to recreate a nation, our nation, without us. They are saying they do not want white children to be made. They are telling white men they have no place in society. We need to stand guard with unwavering and watchful eyes and shine a light on the constant barrage of attacks. Every single time I come across an advertisement that highlights diversity in an absurd way or promotes miscegenation, I make a point to share it online and with my friends and family. I personally take a note of companies that insist on promoting miscegenation and do not spend my money with them. If they want the diverse consumer, they can have them.
You know, whenever something like this happens, you'd be kind of crazy not to sit there and say, should I have done something different? Should I have avoided this topic? Should I have pursued that topic harder? Should I, whatever. And I sort of thought about that this afternoon for a while, chatted about it with some friends. And frankly, I regret nothing. I regret nothing. When you are in possession of knowledge that can help save the world, you are then given a very profound responsibility. And that profound responsibility is that if you withhold that information, you are a causal factor in the destruction of your society. Now, we may curse that information. We may wish that we had never received it. We may wish that we could get that little Men in Black pen to erase it from us, but we can't. So when you are in possession of information that is essential to help people to understand the world and to stop hating each other, you understand? So the IQ information, racial disparities in IQ and all of that, that's really, really important information because it lowers the tensions between the races. It helps us stop hating each other. It helps fight anti-Semitism. It helps fight anti-black. It helps fight anti-white. It helps fight anti-East Asian. You know, if you thought that the only reason the NBA didn't have more East Asians is because they just hated East Asians, you'd be creating all of these tensions and hatreds and hostilities and fights. And so if you're in possession of knowledge that cools the flaming hearts of anger between human beings, between human groups, and you don't share that information, then it's not a burden that I could live with. It's not a burden that my conscience would let me accept. Couldn't do it. It's sort of like if you know how to do the Heimlich maneuver and someone you care about is choking on a piece of fish, do you just sit there and say, well, you know, I really want to finish my cheesecake, so I'm just going to let that person choke out, right? No, you know the Heimlich maneuver. And so you go over. I actually did a show with the daughter of the guy who came up with the Heimlich maneuver. But if you have that knowledge, you have to use it. I mean, you kind of have to, right? I mean, and I have to look at this camera, right? I have to look at this camera. I have to look at you guys. I have to look at you guys, and what I have to do is I have to say, truth is a value, I value the truth, and I'm going to be honest. Being in possession of the kind of knowledge that I have, and look, I validated the knowledge, the IQ stuff. I mean, I talked to 17 world experts, dug through the data, like I made sure it was okay, right? So, I can't look at the camera here. I can't look at you guys and say, oh, you know, you got to support me because I'm honest and I tell the truth and I'm bringing the power of philosophy to the world, and then just step over or step around or step sideways from a central core issue that helps people to understand the world and helps reduce hatred, tension, and hostility between the races. I mean, I'm not saying it's an easy conversation. I get that. But it's one thing to lose your YouTube channel. It's another thing to lose your self-respect. It's another thing to lose your soul. It's another thing to lose your integrity. And I would rather lose a YouTube channel than lose my self-respect. Because the self-respect is the foundation of this show. It's the foundation of my marriage. It's the foundation of my relationship with my daughter. And I have to live with those people. And I have to live with myself. Vastly beyond and outside the presence or absence of a YouTube channel or a Twitch channel or a PayPal account or any of those things. The self-respect is the key. And I would rather live under a bridge with self-respect than live in a mansion with self-loathing. Money cannot buy you self-regard. In fact, if you take money to lie, the money poisons you. So I would much rather, infinitely, it's not even a close call, I would much rather tell the truth and lose a channel than lie, tell you I'm a philosopher, and lose my soul. Because that's a fundamental bargain that the world brings to you, right? It's a fundamental bargain the world brings to you. Give me your soul, and I'll give you stuff. I'll give you prestige, money, fame, glory, prominence, approval. I will give you all of these things, and all you have to do in return is not talk about this. I don't believe that we can fundamentally lie to ourselves. We have to lie to ourselves doubly. We have to lie to ourselves about lying to ourselves. Because if you say, oh, here's this big elephant in the room, what is it, IQ or whatever it is, this big elephant in the room. Absolutely essential that people know about it, but I'm not going to talk about it. And instead, I'm going to take money and praise and fame. Hey, maybe $100 million from Spotify. I'm going to take stuff to lie to the world, to stare into a camera and to lie to the world, and to misrepresent the most essential information that is necessary to help save civilization. I love the world. I love people. I love you guys. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you for the sake of hanging on to a channel or getting a little more money or a lot more money. I've been offered money over the years. Trust me, I've been offered money over the years. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going. Maybe it's my Christian upbringing where you tell the truth though the sky falls. You tell the truth and shame the devil. And when I was a child, I couldn't tell the truth because I grew up in a violent household and I was beaten in boarding school. I couldn't tell the truth. And when you become a man, you become an adult, you must put your childish things away. I'm not going to go from being forced to lie by my mother to being forced to lie to hold on to a channel. No! Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And if that means I end up with nothing, I still have retained the most important thing, which is pride, self-respect, the love of friends and family. And holding on to these material things, holding on to these material things is what causes society to crumble away, civilization to crumble away, the rule of law to crumble away, innocent until proven guilty, due process, all to crumble away. We want the approval of people. We don't want to get people mad at us. We don't want to get boycotted. We don't want to lose our channels. We don't like... What can I tell you? Don't sell yourself. That is my case to you. I've known enough people who sold out to know what a bitter price they paid, and by the time they realized the cost of selling out, it was too late to turn back. Once you've taken the money, once you've spent the money, once you've made your compromises, you can't go back. And that's really terrible and terrifying. that you can erode your identity and your integrity for little. And then by the time you wake up to how much you've lost, it's too late. That's always been it's a terrifying thought to me. Because although I am lied about, although I am slandered, although I am libeled, although I am misrepresented, although I am deplatformed, although I am banned, I'm the one who has to look into the mirror and like what I see and respect what I see. And respect is not something you can just will like toothpaste out of a tube. Respect is something you have to earn by God. You must earn it. And respect means doing what is difficult despite disapproval. Sometimes knowing that that disapproval is going to come. I think when I started talking about IQ, I didn't know what a problem it was going to be. Do you think when I pointed out that I was safe in Poland, that I didn't know that people were going to say, oh my God, he's a white supremacist? No, this is just a fact. I was safe in Poland. I didn't need security in Poland. I was safe in Hong Kong. Well, other than the shock troops of the half-communist government. You got to live with yourself. And you got to not lie to yourself, and you got to not lie to the world. And the devil, so to speak, he does walk among us, and he will tempt you. Because the devil loves it when other people get corrupted. The devil loves it when other people betray themselves. That gives him his dopamine kick of electric arc horny happiness. The destruction of pure souls is the business of the world. But you have to follow the trail of gold into that machinery. And then by the time you're chewed up and spit out, there's no going back. You can't turn the mincemeat back into a cow, so to speak. That's my particular thought. Somebody says, hey, sorry, you got banned, Molyneux. Maybe if you apologize, they'll let you back in. I have no problem apologizing when I'm in the wrong. I really don't. Because, again, you know the cost of not apologizing is very costly when you've done. Because you know, I mean, we've all got a moral sense, right? You know. You know when you've done wrong, right? You know. And the idea that I would apologize for speaking out of love of humanity, the truth and facts of scientific reality, no. No, 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 no. Again, I would rather live under a bridge than do all of that.